Welcome to the Once and Future Authors Podcast. I'm Stephanie, and I'm so excited today to be joined by Dr. June Owen. She's the author of Getting Over a Broken Heart. There's a book that way too many of us certainly should be reading. And our author writes, "How does one get over the shattering pain of a broken heart? The death of a relationship through any means causes such pain, and we will do anything to get over it. The question is, how?" This book was inspired not just by Dr. Owen's work as a clinical psychologist dealing with clients who have suffered terrible heartbreaks, but from her own personal experiences and those of friends. Dr. Owen is a clinical psychologist who has been in private practice for over 30 years. Dr. Owen is also blind, having lost her sight slowly through the years, and she has worked extensively with clients who are disabled, chronically or terminally ill, as well as persons who have suffered trauma, loss, and profound heartbreak. I'm so excited to introduce to you Dr. June Laurel Owen. Thanks so much for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm delighted that you're sharing expertise on such an interesting variety of experiences in getting over a broken heart. But tell me first about you and writing. Obviously, you were in school a long time, so with all of that. But what led you to want to write?
That's a good question. I don't know. That was something that, I mean, I've always wanted to write. It was always somewhere in my head. And I'm trying to remember back, but I'd say throughout the years, like many years ago, I just would take, you know, occasional courses in creative writing, and I'd jot something down or something would hit me. And then, you know, after I finished my doctorate in clinical psychology, I took 5 years of creative writing.
Wow. That's fantastic.
A great inspiration. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
And then, yeah.
Wait, when you work with clients, because I know there are lots of examples in your book, do you take notes or they're just unforgettable?
They're pretty unforgettable. I do. I have a pretty good memory, not to, you know, in that sense, but I do take notes, but not at the time. And it's usually later, and certain things just really, like, there are some quotes in there on the book that really stuck in my head.
I'll bet.
And I had one lovely client who, it's at the end, who basically handed me her manuscript. And that's, you know, said, "Here's your book."
That's wild.
People, what?
That's wild. That's just.
I know. It's good. It's something else. Yeah.
And yeah.
Edited, but it's there. It's her quotes. It's her story, and that's at the end. All right, you know, present case history, two great case histories.
I love that you mentioned that, you know, we all think, if I were just looking blanketly, that a broken heart has to do with, you know, a relationship breaking up. But you mentioned how it's your experience, not just in relationships, but also in your own losses, your own broken heart, let's say, at personal losses. Can you tell us a little bit about your own blindness and how that has affected the book as well as your own practice?
Oh, that's a good question. And it's interesting because that's like kind of at the beginning there, where the very first person that I present was also blind. And I have a genetic disease, and I started losing my sight and was diagnosed. I did have sight at one point where I was able to drive a car even. Kind of a scary notion, but I, not looking back on it, because I probably had potential loss at the time, but didn't know it. But at age 28, I was diagnosed legally blind because I knew something was wrong. And then just by the time I was working, I'd say on my doctorate, I learned Braille and started having things recorded. I was still able to get around with the cane, and I got a guide dog eventually. So yeah. So I guess, and then I worked at the International Center for the Disabled, and that's, I just really had the connection with people suffering all kinds of loss, you know, loss of eyes, loss of limbs, loss of people in their lives, you know.
Gosh. Dr. Owen, tell me, how is it to get a diagnosis like that? You know, you were able to see as a child, even as a teenager, you felt that something was going on there, I'm sure, ended up with doctors, and they diagnosed you. How old were you when you found out that this would lead to blindness?
Well, I was age 28 when I was diagnosed, and this is going to sound kind of crazy, but I was having difficulty, like, for example, it's hard to explain, but I would trip on a stairs, you know, because I was losing my peripheral vision, which is the ability to get around and see black and white. And I noticed that I was really having trouble at night, but I had the central vision. So I really went from doctor to doctor. Nobody diagnosed me. So I thought, oh boy, I think I'm crazy. Why am I having all these strange experiences? There were too many to name, but where I'd be walking and then walk into something at the bottom, you know, that's out of the field of vision. Yeah. So when I actually got the diagnosis, there was actually a sense of a relief, but he didn't tell me I'd go totally blind. I said, well, I keep my central vision, which is what I have now, and you know, had back then. And he said, yes, that was wrong. I did lose my central vision. And that's what really got to me. And it's been a gradual loss throughout the years. I'd say even 20 years ago, I had, you know, I had more vision, or 10 years. It's just so gradual. It's like aging. It's like you don't really feel it. It's like minute by minute, day by day, until one day, I guess, a person, you look in the mirror and it's like, that's me.
Right.
So that's how I equate the eyesight loss. Yeah.
Yeah, no, you're right. We sometimes don't realize that we're aging until we think back 10 years and see a picture of us, I don't know, you know, doing something or thinking about it. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't do that now.
No.
You were explaining central vision. I'm just so that I understand, does that mean that things that are directly in front of you as opposed to peripheral?
Oh, that's the ability to see fine detail, to read, and to see color.
Okay.
And I have to say, like somebody said to me, I mean, yes, like what bothers me the most, and they thought I would say independence. Yes, that drives me crazy because I'm I'll admit, but it's the loss of aesthetic beauty because I did used to paint. My father was a professional artist, and I used to paint and draw, and I just love seeing the sunset and color. I love color. And when I lost that just, I don't know, that's, I think, got to me more than anything, not being able to see a beautiful sunset. I mean, I see it in my head. I wrote a poem that describes this.
Really?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Talk about what it was like, the loss of my vision. It's, you know, short, somewhere in my blog. Mm-hmm.
But you can still see it in your head, you were saying.
Things in my head. I see colors and things in my head, like people describe things to me. So having people say, well, do you think it's easier having been born blind or losing vision later? And I always say I'm of the school of thought of better to have loved and lost. I'd rather this be the case, even though what comes with this is loss. Whereas a person born blind, they don't feel that loss.
Right.
They haven't lost anything. They just adapt to the world completely differently. So I'm more in the world of the sighted in that sense, because I have a visual, like if you ask somebody congenitally blind, I don't know, they don't know what you mean. You say the color red means nothing, or a square or anything. It just says it doesn't mean anything.
Right.
You know, like a square would be something that has points, and the colors mean nothing. So it's kind of interesting. So I feel like I'm more, at one point I felt like I was in both worlds, and then I felt like I'm still more in the world of the sighted because I see things in my head.
Yeah.
And when I write, I see things in my head. I kind of visualize things. Yeah.
You know, I'm glad you said that about feeling better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all. That kind of brings us right into getting over a broken heart and dealing with relationships too. People will say the same thing. Is it better that I loved and then went through this terrible trauma and pain when it broke up, or that I just never felt love in my life at all, and then I would just not feel pain. Do you agree with that with relationships as well as with sight?
Oh, definitely. I mean, look, wouldn't it be wonderful if you all met that perfect person and, you know, there was no feeling of heartbreak, but life isn't like that. No matter what it is, we're all going to experience loss, be loss of a parent, loss of a pet, loss of anything. And we all, you know, lose certain abilities as time goes on. It's just life. And I like that's what I get into in the healing section. It's just such trying to embrace your fear, your pain, and embrace just all parts of yourself. You know, we're basic emotions, and joy, anger, sorrow, it's all there. And it's all part of the richness of life.
Right, right.
We're not meant to be happy all the time.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that about embracing, as opposed to people who try to run away from their feelings or shut down certain feelings. Your attitude is very different than that.
Yeah, and I, like, at one point in the book, I guess towards the end, where I talk about what helped me was, yes, you kind of want to get away from that pain. The book was inspired by, you know, a breakup that really, I don't know, for some reason it just derailed me. And, you know, I know why. It took a long time. I sat with myself. But at first I was just picking up the phone, talking to friends, probably drove everybody crazy. But I, you know, and as you're talking about it, you feel that relief. But as soon as, like I say, you hang up the phone, there it comes back, all those feelings. And one day I was about to reach for the phone and I said, I'm going to just sit with myself. And then when I sat with myself and just let myself feel whatever I, you know, need to feel, what I felt was this incredible compassion for my own self and a love for my own self. Then I felt better. That put me on that road to healing from that relationship. So that's, yeah.
Wow, such sage advice right there. You know, not turning away from it, but sitting in it and feeling it, and validating yourself to the right to have those feelings as well.
And as I say, it's being gentle with their own self. You know, it's like I say, one of the things I think that when I analyzed what causes, like the first part where I talk about the pain, what causes such pain, there are many things. Of course, there's loss, but there's also the blow to yourself. And the other thing I call is the death of hope. That's what derailed me in my relationship, that breakup that inspired the book.
Right, right.
This person represented a hope, you know.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because
have a family.
Breakup, death of hope.
Yeah, death of hope, yeah.
Why did that particular relationship, say, have a death of hope when other breakups were just about the person?
I think the death of hope was that it was late in life. It was like in my early 50s, and I'd met this fellow, and I had been attempting to, have a family on my own since I hadn't, you know, lived in a relationship at that point. And I was, truthfully, I was, you know, trying to have a baby on my own, and so I could have my family. And I then switched to trying to adopt a child, and then I met this guy, and I he's about my age, he's same age, and I told him, and he was all excited. I thought, oh my God, at this late stage in life, I didn't think I'd ever meet somebody that would, you know, want to do that, let alone get really excited at the thought. So we were kind of in that dreamland of that fantasy of just, you know, being together and forming a family together. And when it fell apart, it wasn't just losing him, it was that dream that fell apart. And later on, I did adopt a child of my own.
Good for you. Good for you. And I love that. That almost answers my next question, was how do you deal with the death of hope? You know, the death of a relationship is one thing, but hope in the future is such a blow.
That's true. Yeah. How do you deal with the death of hope?
Yeah.
Well, that's...
I'm hearing from you that your hope, and certainly I'm no psychotherapist, but it sounded like your hope was tied to this person. And then once you finally were able to, I'll say, put that relationship in its place, you took your own hope. You said you went out and you adopted a child. So
yes, from birth, it was like, it's not just, it's the death of a dream. Like you have that dream, you know, your whole life, maybe a little girl, you want to think, oh, I'm going to get married, I'm going to have a family. And
right, right.
At whatever. And so I think what happened is I just didn't let go of the dream for myself. If I couldn't have it with him, I could still have this on my own. With, if not with someone else, I could have it myself.
Yeah, no, that's so empowering. You know, it's as if I were dating an airline pilot and I wanted to go to Paris and we broke up and I think I'm not losing just him as a person, but I'm losing Paris. But then if I say, you know what, I could take myself to Paris. That's
right.
Kind of, you know, in a nutshell, what you're saying. And that's a great way of channeling that if the hope is not tied to another person, you're empowered.
I'm sorry. I guess that's like a lot of the premise of my book. Like a lot of this, it comes from inside of us, that strength. So, you know, and which part of strength, people think, oh, I got to be like stoic. To me, strength is that you embrace your fragility. I'm vulnerable. I'm sad. I'm sorrowful. I'm angry. I'm whatever you need to be. Just that's okay. Just
oh.
let yourself.
I want that on a poster. Strength is embracing your fragility. Oh my gosh. Oh, that's a great one. That should be a t-shirt.
I never thought about that. Yeah.
But you know, you're right. Too many people think that being strong means putting on armor and deflecting all of those feelings. And you're saying actually the opposite leads to healing. Strength is fragility.
Yeah. It's like I was reading something the other day, and I how did she put it? It was like, just the strength is in being vulnerable, being able to be vulnerable. She had a whole theory of superheroes, which I thought was pretty interesting. She said, you know, every client is a superhero because what a risk to, you know, to make yourself vulnerable to a total stranger. When you think about that, you're opening up your heart and soul to this total stranger. That takes a lot of that takes a lot.
It does. You're right. And people sometimes think that strong people are stoic and don't have relationships or don't let anyone close.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the, I don't know, the trend. But I think that's, no, definitely strength comes from being able to be able to be vulnerable. That takes strength.
Yeah.
Allow yourself to be vulnerable.
I just read somebody I know who lost their spouse had posted that grief is the price we pay for love.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think in your book and in your teaching also, heartbreak, you know,
yeah.
is the price we pay.
It is. I also say the price of intimacy is we do lose a part of ourselves in a relationship. You don't want to lose your whole self, but you lose a little part of yourself because your life gets enmeshed with that person.
Right.
So that, you know, when you break up, you feel like you are losing. That's where I get into the self-esteem, where you feel like you've lost a part of yourself. Well, in a sense, you've lost that part of yourself that's intertwined with that other person. And it's kind of trying to reclaim that. What do you assume?
Yeah. But the opposite, protecting yourself from ever losing anything and not letting anyone close, you're already a loser then because you're not.
That's death. I look at it, you know, it's like you just walled yourself off to life. And life is, it's just, like I said, it's about being able to feel whatever you need to feel and just different experiences. So I talk about depression. I talk about grief versus depression. They're very different. Depression like pulls you away from your feelings. It's like you feel dead. You feel empty. But grief is you feel sorrow, sadness, and that's what you're supposed to feel with the loss.
Does grief sometimes lead to depression?
Yeah, that's the complicated thing. I mean, it's not. so cut and dry. I mean, I do, it's one of my parts in the book called Grief Versus Depression. When they can go, you can go back and forth between the two of them, and they can get intertwined, sort of.
But grief is like you said, as is to be expected. That's actually a
Well, we've
healthy
had a loss. It just comes in waves, you
thing.
know, like you'll feel okay for a while, then you'll have that wave, and maybe sometimes you will feel dead or empty or depressed, and other times you'll be able to feel sad. Like, you know how we feel better when you cry? If you have a, people say, I just had a good cry.
Yes.
Yeah, you feel better.
So, Dr. Owen, even after the losses you have had in your own life, have you found in your own life or even with patients that you've worked with that it makes them want to put up a wall and I'm not going there again? How do you deal with that?
Yeah, that's hard. I know. It's, unless there's a way to get through that wall, sometimes I, you know, I'm like a really interactive kind of a therapist, so I will relay some of my own experiences. So it's like almost giving permission. It's like it's okay, you know, to feel sad. It's okay to feel these different things. It's hard to explain the process of that sort of thing, but sometimes I'll just pick might relay something.
Right.
So that, wait a minute, you don't have to have that wall, but you're right now you need that wall, and maybe they do for a bit, but not for your life, because it's like walling yourself off to just to life. So I see.
Do you ever notice somebody, whether it's a patient or even a friend, having that wall for too long?
Yeah, that's known as massive depression and being just like a deadening of yourself. Yeah, that's like very sad.
It is.
Like nothing, it actually can make me feel a little depressed, because like if you see that something is feels so impenetrable, and I don't give, I'm not someone that gives up easily, so.
I could see that for sure.
But I hate to think that somebody would just put that wall up. And I have known people like that, you know, but not necessarily even a patient. It could be anybody, you know,
Right,
to
right.
put that wall up.
And they put that wall up and you might have words of wisdom for them, or sometimes I'm guessing they even have words of wisdom for themselves, but
Probably. And I was just thinking, because I had somebody at I knew a long time ago that she said her heart was broken. This is not a patient, you know, in her 20s, and she never wanted to go through that pain again. So that was it. She swore off relationships, but it seemed to me, like, give her credit for this. She seemed to find like a lot of reward and do other things, you know. She was actually a nanny here for a bit, and she seemed to enjoy life, other aspects of life, culture, music, nature. So she seemed to fill herself up with other things. So I wouldn't say that she was walled off from life, you know, when I think about it. It's funny, I would, didn't think I'd be talking about her, but that entered my mind. Yeah,
Yeah.
I would not have called this woman depressed.
Okay. And
Yeah.
just because she chose a different path in her life, and decided to find fulfillment in other areas, culture, nature, etc., doesn't necessarily mean she has a wall. She just might have written off, you know what, I'm not going to pursue relationships. I'm going to pursue this instead.
Yeah, she just kind of redirected her you know, whatever you call it, her
Right.
leanings just to something else, that where she felt she could be fulfilled. I mean, that could be writing for some people.
Right.
I remember something they said, like Thomas Hardy, well, writers will, you know, novelists will fall in love with their characters. And I was thinking of Thomas Hardy. That was one of my favorite novels, Tess. You know, you could see he was in love with
Yes.
her.
Absolutely. So redirecting, even in your own case, you'd mentioned adopting a child. That was a redirection, shall we say, that rather than go in this path, you said, nope. I'm gonna be empowered and do
Yeah.
what I want.
It's like I'm not gonna have the whole package, but maybe I don't have to, you know, and I don't know, things don't have to be in this perfect linear fashion either, you know.
Exactly.
That's whatever. I thought, maybe I'll meet somebody later on, maybe I won't, but at least I'll have this part of my life that I know I always wanted, because, you know, I always loved children.
Exactly. No, I
knew
love
I
that.
At least wanted one, you know.
Yeah. I love that you kind of took the reins of your own life in your hands. And your friend who is into culture and nature and making their own life also sounds like that. So very different from putting a wall up. Putting a wall up means, you know, depression, emptiness.
It's a terrible, state. It really is. And I was thinking something, and it just, I'm trying to remember exactly what it was.
That's okay. What would you, I know that it, putting
oh,
all
that was it.
Your,
it came back to me. I'm sorry.
Okay.
That was something I thought of as a book, because for me to become a mother was like full of the, it was like the long and winding journey to motherhood.
Oh, I love that.
It took me like 10 years to, you know,
wow,
achieve that dream. Yeah, I went through every possible, I mean, I'm gonna get into it now, but
yeah, no,
some,
that's
yeah, it was massive. It was like I didn't give up. I went this route, then I went that route, and then the other route, and it's very complex.
Well, if not a full book, at least a series of blog posts, because that would be very inspiring for people who are in that 10-year, I'm sure during that 10-year period, if it took you that long, it was in it was discouraging.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So to hear from somebody who made it through that darkness for a decade, but reached the light at the end of the tunnel is hugely inspiring.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I said, if not a book, at least a series of blog posts would be fabulous.
Something. I mean, I've jotted some of it down, and, you know, I never really went anywhere with it, because I was busy taking care of my little one, who is now 18.
Exactly. We're very busy with that, and that keeps you busy. 18 years old. Wow. That's the cusp of a whole lot of relationships and experiences out there. So if you had one piece of advice for her and for all of us on the cusp of adulthood, what would that be?
Cusp of.
I said adulthood, right? 18.
Oh, wow. You know, teenage girls, especially, I don't know, something about it. And where, or people that at the crossroads of, like, say, picking a career or something. And they, well, my mother wants me to be a doctor, a lawyer, or a banker, or make money. And I'm like, do something you love. Do something that makes you happy. You're going to be with this for many, many years. And
right.
I just, I'm always a very much follow your heart type of person.
I love that.
Yeah, you'll find a way. You find a way. Because you do that, it's fake. Just, I feel like, just be true to yourself, your authentic self. Well, everybody has a certain leaning.
Yeah.
If you want to be a musician, an artist, and whatever. I don't know.
Well, coming from a doctor, that means a lot.
So.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. I just want to remind our listeners, Getting Over a Broken Heart by Dr. June Laurel Owen. Also visit her website at doclistens.com and learn more about her work. And maybe if you're getting over a broken heart, this is the book for you, but I think all of us in the course of life have that shared experience. So a beautiful book, personal stories from Dr. Owen's own life, as well as some stories of patients that she's worked with to help you to realize that you are not alone. Thank you so much for joining me, and thanks for a great book.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.